Welcome to the Passion Over Profits podcast with Top Son Goku, bringing you your weekly dose of Dragon Ball Super Collector's content. Stay tuned for exclusive interviews with some of the most knowledgeable DBS collectors in the community.
What's up, guys? My name is Top Son Goku, and welcome to another episode of the Passion Over Profits podcast. Today, I have Melvin on the show. He's the face behind the Sensu Pop YouTube channel. Definitely go check it out. He calls himself a casual player, but he definitely seems to know what he's talking about. And it was a very, very interesting podcast for me because I was able to pick the brain of a player to be able to, you know, experience the hobby from a different perspective. I think that's just very, very interesting. We talked about a variety of different topics, but we also tackled the somewhat taboo topic of, you know, why there's so much friction between the players and the collectors in our hobby. And I think we made some pretty damn, we came to some pretty good conclusions. And that just shows that, you know, we both need to open up the conversation and get to know each other in order to appreciate each other. Because another point we made during this podcast is that we both need players and collectors to make this DBS TCG a success and to keep making it a success. It was really very interesting to me, so I hope you're able to, you know, listen all the way till the end and just enjoy it as much as I did. It's funny because he actually, during the podcast, he invited me to be a guest on his podcast as well, his players podcast. So he was the clueless collector on my podcast, but I will be the clueless player on his podcast, which will be pretty interesting. So stay tuned for that. And meanwhile, I hope you enjoy this episode. Talk to you soon, guys.
Thanks for inviting me. So have we started recording? We have, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just gonna cut it up. No worries.
All right.
I'm gonna find a way to make it smooth.
Okay.
So, do you maybe want to introduce yourself?
Hey, listeners. My name is Melvin. Some people know me as Schlitzy or Sensu Pop, and I do have a YouTube channel. And I am a big player. I play a lot of Dragon Ball Super card game. Started in set 2, actually. So pretty early when it comes to the game. And I started loving the game and I was playing it. I also fell in love with playing the game. And so I just continued playing it. And I have a YouTube channel, Sensu Pop. So if you want to find me, go to Sensu Pop on YouTube. You can find me. Also, I do a lot of Instagram too because I really love the artwork of the card. So you can find me also under the same name, Sensu Pop on Instagram.
Man, that's actually how I first found you, is on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I just looked at your pictures. And I was like, man, that looks so clean.
Yeah.
Man, welcome to the podcast. I really, really appreciate to have you here. Mm-hmm. So do you maybe wanna start by saying like how you got introduced to the game, because that's something that's a little bit different for everyone. And I see that you started in 2017 then.
Yeah,
right? Union Force.
Yeah, so I started in 2017. I'm not too sure whether it was 2017 or 2018, because how I actually got started is I am a big fan of Dragon Ball, right? Dragon Ball Z, and I'm a big fan of Broly. I'm a Broly guy, so don't kill me. So I'm a big fan of Broly, and so I was just one day browsing online on eBay to see what is there, like a Broly collectibles. I'm a minimalistic guy, so I don't really buy a lot of stuff, but I would like to have something like Broly, right, to have, because I really like that character. And I just stumbled across the Dragon Ball Super cards on eBay.
Yeah.
And it looks so good, right? Like Rampaging Horror, Broly, man. SPR, yeah. Like Secret Rare, Special Rare. It looks so good. I was like, okay, I really need to look more into the game. So I started to look into the game, and there at that point of time, Europe does not even have products yet. So what happened was, coincidentally, in a couple of weeks' time, I was about to leave to Asia, and it was in Singapore. And so there was a community in Singapore. So I just went on to their website. I got in touch with the community. So I was there. They were very, very nice. Of course, I bought a lot of products from them. And then they brought me to their locals. I started playing with them. They taught me how to play. And that is why I have a very strong connection with Singapore, because actually it was there that I started going for my first local. They were really, really nice to me. They gave me play mats. They gave me those sleeves.
Yeah.
Victory sleeve.
The winner sleeves.
The winner sleeves. Nice. I do have quite a couple of them because they were given to me at that point of time. And can I continue one more story?
Yeah,
so
sure.
It was there. I went for my... When I was there, so what happened was the third set already launched. So I got into Union Force. But when I was in Singapore, 1 week later, it was the third set. What was the third set?
Cross
Worlds, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know anything. I'm not part of this TCG thing, right? So they were just asking me, hey, come over, just pay some money, and we will just open some packs and play with it. So I went there. I was like, okay, cool. I can buy some products. So I opened some packs. So there was, I think you get 4 packs, and then you open it up, and you're supposed to play with the 4 packs. Because it was draft, right? And guess what?
Yeah, drafts. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a draft tournament. And guess what? I won the tournament by losing every single game. But out of my four packs, I pulled the SCR.
Crazy. So, man, that's insane. Yeah.
And at a point of time, I don't really understand the concept of SCR, right? I just heard screaming. So it was...
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was like, wow, this guy looks really good. And
yeah. And yeah. Everyone around you is like, whoa.
Yeah. So I won by losing every single game. So
yeah. Oh man, that's such an epic story. Like how you started with the game, and that's amazing. That's really, really cool. I guess the entire TCG is linked to these very strong memories then.
Yeah,
I mean,
correct.
What's the way you explain it? I mean, you're still pretty passionate about what happened. That's mm-hmm. pretty cool, man. That's amazing. That's the best story I've heard so far. Like how you started with the game. That's pretty cool.
And every single year when I go back to Singapore, I met up with the guys also. Like we're still playing together, and we hang out also. Yep, so
yeah,
it was,
that's pretty cool.
It's pretty nice. You really make friends with this TCG thing.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Man, I have so many new friends since I started with DBS. It's just so cool. Really, I mean, it's amazing. It's a hobby that turned into a passion. And when you get in contact with, you know, people that are as passionate about the hobby as you are, I mean, it's just like an instant, like you're instantly friends, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, so that's what your podcast is called, right? Passion over profit.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, we're here not because, you know, we see the cards as stocks and because, you know, you buy this on the dip and you want to, you know, increase 10%, whatever. It's just, that's not why we're here. Right. So, yeah, man, that's amazing. I'm so happy for you that you got into the game, because if I understand correctly, if you took your minimalistic approach to the next level and you didn't go for that Broly, you probably wouldn't even have gotten into the game.
Yeah, but on the contrary, right? Because if you are a minimalistic guy and you try to keep your stuff to the minimum, you know what's the best part about what is the best way to collect? Collect cards. Because they're just so small.
Ah, that's true. That's
right?
So true, yeah.
They're so small, and you can put it in a very nice leather folder. And that's your hobby. That's your collection. And it's still minimalism. So it does not... But now I'm playing, so I have a huge pile of cards. But
yeah, I bet you do, man.
At the start, it wasn't the case, so it was still kind of working, but now not really.
You were just kidding yourself, right?
Yeah, correct. I see the contradiction there already, so I'm not gonna continue this point.
Oh man, that's so cool. The way I wanted to start the podcast is actually to quote you on your last video, not quote you, but I've seen your last video about rotation, right? And at some point you said something interesting, saying that RTCG, in order to keep on thriving, right, for our hobby to keep sustaining itself, we need new players, like we need new blood, right? Mm-hmm. And we need the experienced players, but we also need collectors. Can you comment on that?
All right. So before I comment on that, I have to say that I am not a TCG veteran, right? I don't play Yu-Gi-Oh! I don't play Pokemon. I kind of really just started on Dragon Ball. When I was younger,
okay,
someone gave me some Magic the Gathering cards, and I've never bought any cards. I'm just playing with those. So I don't think that counts. But my first serious one, it's definitely Dragon Ball. Yeah. It's the same with anything, right? Or any serious type of organization or product. Okay, so you need newcomers to make the game grow. However, the collectors are always there to make your cards valuable.
Yeah.
Right? There are cards that collectors and players, sometimes when they might go for the same cards. However, collectors goes for some cards that aren't played anymore. For example, like Height of Mastery Son Goku. How expensive is the card? SPR. Do you need it? No, there is a 30 cents version.
But sure. Yeah,
if you pull a special rare, that is going to be very collectible for the collectors, but not for the players. They go for different types of cards. So now you have a bigger set of players or people who are invested financially or time-wise into the card game, and sometimes they just target different types of card, but sometimes the conflict comes when they target the same card. So it's better.
What about that? Because man, thanks for this comment, because I never thought about, I mean, I have thought about it, but not in this context, about the difference between SR and SPR. Of course, SPR is then the collectible variant of that card. Mm-hmm. It's the same mechanics for the game. I mean, it's the exact same card, but with different quality and artwork. Mm-hmm. But it's true. Like, you have the same card, and it's one is made to play with it, and one is to collect. And collectors just engage in the hobby as well, thanks to these cards, and it just makes Bandai more successful with their game, and it increases the longevity of the game.
Correct.
That's I never made this link between, you know, longevity of our game and there being an SPR version of the SR. That's pretty nice. Thanks for this comment. Yeah.
And honestly, right now the game has a problem, and the problem isn't because of the collectors who are coming in to buy all the SPR's version of the cards. Mm-hmm. The game has a problem with promos, but collectors are not interested in promos.
Not all of them. It's not mainstream, that's for sure. It's not mainstream.
So I'm referring to right now at this point of recording, you know, we have a promo called the Super Saiyan 3 Gogeta promo, mm-hmm. and that one goes up to 50 to 70 USD per card. Because it's not bling, so a lot of collectors, they're not, it's for playability wise and not the collector's market, not damned at least. Maybe until this podcast comes out and then the collector hears it, just gonna go for it.
is it that winner promo you're talking about?
It's not just even winners though. I think the normal non-shining promo, that one would go 50 easily.
Damn.
USD. Yep.
Damn, that's
but that card is crazy. Good.
I guess if you really need it in order to play competitively with the game, then everybody mm-hmm. needs that card. I think we already answered that first question, right? The link between players and collectors, I think that just makes sense. Moving towards, you know, because we're talking about prices, right? Do you feel as if the game is still affordable enough, or do you feel that prices are starting to become a barrier for new players to come in?
This is a question I cannot answer. I have to say to the reason why I cannot answer for most people, it's I am comfortable with where I am. And you know how I usually buy my set? I buy everything play set. So I have all the cards in play set, and some of the cards I upgrade to special rare.
Yeah.
So when I want to play, I have most of the cards that I need to, because that's how I like to play the game. I love to experiment with a lot of decks. So
Yeah.
that is very difficult for me to judge, because if you talk about affordability, it is very different for many types of people. And also expectation. For example, I'm just going to use me for example. If I don't own that SS3 Gogeta, and
Yeah.
I'm playing a deck that uses that SS3 Gogeta, and I just don't play it because, in my opinion, for that card, I don't want to pay 50 USD for it. And I
Yeah.
am fine not having that card because I am not a competitive player. But I also could understand that some players would be very, very frustrated if they love a certain deck and if they want to be competitive and they need to buy the card. So, for them, the game, it's unaffordable. For me, the way that I play it is still pretty affordable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're not competitive, you can literally just print out the card, right? You can just print it out
Yeah,
and put it in a
correct.
sleeve. If that's really one card that you really need in order to be able to play, I mean, I guess if you need a play set of four, I guess, then
Yes.
yeah, it's easily $200. You just print it out, right?
Yes,
I
correct. And
mean,
you could just proxy it.
yeah.
Apparently, there is a cheaper looking version of it.
Yeah.
And it does not have the same effect, but it's just cheaper looking. But it is SS3 Gogeta and it's black. And we call it the Gogeta at home. You know the meme? The
No.
mommy, you tell your mom. The meme, it's like, "Mom, I need SS3 Gogeta promo." And then your mom says, "We have SS3 Gogeta at home." And that SS3 Gogeta at home is the cheaper version. So that's the SS3 Gogeta at home version. So
I will have to look up this that meme. That
I
makes so
was the
much
one
sense.
who
You made
posted it
it.
though.
You
Yeah,
made
that was
it.
the
Okay.
SS3 Gogeta at home
It's a
meme.
Sri Gogeta
And that one,
at
I think it's like around
home.
two euros per card.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, okay. So I thought you
In summary, I cannot answer the question because it really depends. For example, like the King Cold deck. The King Cold deck right now, it's strong, it's good. And I think that deck, it's less than 100.
Yeah.
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 You can foil it out in less than 100, I think so.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you want every single card in foil,
Bling,
I mean
bling.
that's not required in order to be able to play, but it's, I mean, it's nice, I guess. But that's a collector in you that is already at work. If you
Yeah,
want
but
the SPRs in the set of the SRs, if you want the foil variants, then I mean
yep.
it's already the collector in you that is triggered.
Yeah. But Bandai also did something pretty. I think that was a very smart move from Bandai, because now all commons and uncommon foils, they are full art.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's also a super good move on their part.
Yeah, they
So
look
true.
so good.
So true, and looks so much better.
They look
Looks
so
so
good,
much better.
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So if there's a deck that you like, you invest in it. Put in that
Yeah,
extra
even I
20
am.
to 30 euros.
Exactly. Even I am like, damn, I want this card market. Click, click. And I order it. Yeah, man. It's so, some cards look so good, but because they are not full art, it takes away from the artwork. And just thanks to this decision, making a full art version foil, man, that's amazing.
Yeah,
I'm
and
all for it.
some cards looks like they are SR. Some cards looks like SR, but they are just common and uncommon
Or
foil.
better, or better. And if you could take it a step further, if you take the pre-release versions, man, they look so good,
Oh,
man.
this is a question that maybe I want to pose to you and the collectors, right?
Yeah.
Which is, what For me, pre-release doesn't do anything for me because it is just a stamp.
Yeah.
It doesn't change the art. I can understand common, non-foil, and common full art foil.
Yeah.
Totally, I can understand that because that card looks so much better. But just mm-hmm. stamp-wise, doesn't do anything for me. But maybe that is the player in me and not the collector.
Do you feel the same with Judge promos?
Yeah. I mean, now... Oh, yeah, it's totally the same with Judge promo. But Judge promo has a different foiling.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
true. But, as for the pre-release stamps, I think... I can only speak for myself, but for me, it's that these cards are so much more harder to acquire
mm-hmm.
than the regular foils. I mean, the regular foils, you can literally go to Card Market, get every single one for like 10 cents each, and there you have it. You have all the foils that you need. But if you want to do the same with pre-release, go on Card Market, man. You have like three available each. That's insane. That's super hard to acquire. And therefore, the collectability of it is just there. Mm-hmm. You don't. It's like, why do you grade cards? That's the same question. Like, why mm-hmm. do you grade cards? Why do you go for the highest rarity of a specific card? It's just collectability. It's being able to have a card that is special, a card that not everyone has, and that just enhances your attachment to a card. And to me. It enhances your experience of the hobby. It's actually tough to explain.
Yep. But I think this is where Bandai did a really good job, right? Which is so now true. We have the same card, full art, foil, but one version of it, it's very attractive to collectors.
Yeah.
The other version of it is attractive to players. And they can, I mean, I believe that the players, they would want that that stamp version too, right? But a lot of us, we can live without it and just said, okay, this card looks good, but it just does not have that gold stamp.
Yeah, and as a collector, it's completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. Like, I love BT5, Gogeta, SR, that also have the judge promo. How is it called?
BT5, Gogeta.
Yeah. That also has a judge promo.
Is it the 7 cost Gogeta, the banned one?
I mean, you can get like an SR version for what?
Mm-hmm.
but in my opinion, the way I feel is like I love the art, right? I think that it's the best Gogeta art they have done so far, in my opinion, right?
That one.
That is my favorite. That's my favorite Gogeta card.
Wow. Okay.
No question. But as a collector, I love this card. It's amazing. But knowing that there is a judge card and a judge level 2, man, I need the level 2, man. I need the level 2. Like that 1 euro card is insignificant compared to the judge promo. So as a collector, collecting the lower rarities, it just doesn't do it for me. That's insane, man. I opened some BT13 packs. I pulled some nice full art foils, and I'm like, damn it, now I need it in pre-release. Now I need it in pre-release because I love the art and I want it. That's crazy.
I think I can understand you because when it comes to a very special version of a very special card that you love it, you really need it in the highest rarity. For example, I think today you just shared my highest rarity card that I owned, right? And that was a leader that I love a lot, the Zamasu leader. So I have that Zamasu leader card, and I have it in Zamasu leader card in foil. I have that Zamasu leader card in pre-release stamped.
Yeah.
But when I saw the metal card, I was like, I need it. I don't know why. I don't know why I need it. And I was actually so pissed with one of my buddies. Oh, poor guy. He got so hard for me. He sold his metal Zamasu without asking me. And I was like, do you know, I actually like that card a lot. Of course, he doesn't know. But I was just being a dick.
Yeah,
poor
man,
guy.
That's,
if he's listening, I'm so sorry for how I behave. Yeah, because I was bitching about it. To my friends, and one of them was like, I have one. I was like, yeah, let's talk. So we agreed on a price, and
I think it's a pretty scarce card, right? There are not that many.
I think there are 90 pieces of it.
Yeah, that's.
I'm not too sure how many in English, but I think there were totally 90 pieces of it.
Total 90. Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's pretty scarce, man. You own less than 1% of its population.
I love it. I love that card so much. So I understand from that point of view, right?
Yeah. So there's that that notion that we kind of hate each other, like players and collectors. I mean, I see a lot of players in the Facebook community always, you know, trashing collectors. God damn it! It's all because of the collectors that the prices are so high. What's your take on that?
Okay, that's a hard question, and I shall try to step properly, carefully. Okay, so I think there was a time where collectors really jumped into the card game, right? And a lot of cards went crazily expensive. It just showed up all the way like sky high. And I believe that there was a lot of frustration from the players that some of the cards that they want to are gone. And sometimes some of those choices, some of the comments are understandable. However, I want to say too that sometimes it's also quite entitled coming from the players.
Yeah.
Because they will be like saying, you know, let's take Height of Mastery, SPR, for example. Who said, oh, I cannot get the Height of Mastery SPR anymore. And I'll be like, you know, if you don't need that to play a game. And yeah, they were talking about Awakened Powers. It's like, you know, if there was zero decks right now that actually play Awakened Power.
Yeah, it's not playable.
And I mean, even before the collectors come in, right? If you were to take that card, put it into a deck, shuffle it, slap it down on the table, I will let you win the game, really, because you just played a very expensive card in your deck. I'll let you win the game. I'll tip my hat to you and see myself out. And so there is this part. However, there is also another part which is understandable. Okay, that part, I would say that coming from the players, strange, a little bit entitled, I have to say. But there is another part which is the scalping of new booster boxes. However, I believe that this is not collectors. These are just people who are just joining the collectors community and trying to find out what is the most expensive one, and they scalp it. You know, they were showing like they were holding boxes and boxes of the new releases and trying to resell them. And I think that's bad. However, I believe, Tom, you would say that that's not collectors, right?
I appreciate you saying this, because that's been so frustrating for me too, is that to see players almost being mad at collectors. But I mean, this is not a collector thing. This is just a valuable market thing. it's not the collectors who want to add, you know, 10 cases worth of a set in their collection. I mean, what the hell? What collectors do that? But it's more, and even, you know, even if it would be an investment part of things, only kind of cutting supply, but not, you know, relisting things for 3 times the market. I mean, that's also understandable from what I mean. I have more respect for that. But I mean, the scalpers, I mean, it's not a collector thing. It's just a market that is very active. That's it. That's just a symptom.
Yep. Maybe a question for you then. What is a collector, and where do you draw the line between a collector and someone who's just coming in for profit? I mean, your podcast, it's Passion Over Profit, right? So
yeah,
where do you draw that line for you?
Man, that's a tough question. So I believe that a collector will own a card because he wants to, in terms of sentimental value, right? It's you're able to find a sense of achievement by acquiring an item,
mm-hmm.
and you can go even further by, you know, completing a set, for example. That is something that a scalper or an investor will not do, unless you can demand a premium for a complete set. But that's very, very specific for collectors. And honestly, it's kind of hard to be a collector without being engaged in the investment part, because you do see, I mean, if you're very active as a collector, you do see your collection growing in value by the month or by the year, or I mean, now we're in a dip or in a crash, however you want to call it, but still, I mean, some of my cards are still like 10 times more expensive now than when I purchased them. Mm-hmm. And so it does definitely expose you to some sort of investment mentality, but I think that what sets collectors apart is the why you buy something, the mm-hmm. reason behind you collecting a card. It's not, you don't make your purchase decisions based on, is this going to be the next Awakened Power, right?
Mm-hmm. Is this
going to be the next first edition Charizard? You know?
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because personally for me, the things that I think I left the Facebook collectors group, or I muted. The reason is I get personally triggered when the question is, there's two types, when the question is like, hey, is this the next, like what you said, right? Is this the next, going to be the next Awakened Power? What is the most expensive card? What is the next card that's going to rise in value? Those questions really pisses me off, because there's no passion in it.
Man,
there's no personal connection to it.
You and I are going to be friends, because, I mean, for me too, every time I see this, I'm like, oh, I get so triggered. There was a boom in popularity for our TCG, right, around December to January or something. And back then I used to get like easily 5 to 10 messages a day. It's not anymore. But I used to have so many messages like, hey, what should I invest in? Because they see the prices soar, right? And they're like, what should I invest in? What's undervalued? Or hey, what's the next Awakened Power? Or hey, I mean, oh, man, I get so triggered, and it's so annoying, because I'm like, bro, forget about the prices. Get to learn the game and buy what you want, buy what you like, right?
Yeah.
It's so annoying, yeah. But I mean, yeah, I totally understand. That's not collecting. They are not in it for the passion. They are in it for the profits.
Yeah, there's no soul to it. You know, there's no sell to it. And for me, I became the accidental. I always called myself the accidental collector.
Yeah.
Because when I first came in, it was set to you that the cards weren't expensive at all. But yeah, I love the cards, right? I love Dragon Ball and I love the cards. And for example, I'm just going to give you some stories over here. It's when the first signed cards came out. So I know signed SPRs, right? The signature cards. They are a big deal in the collectors community.
Yeah, definitely.
But when it first came out, someone actually offered me and said, hey, I got a full set of the signed cards. Do you want it? I would say, how much do you want it? And he was like, $120 for the full set. And I was like, okay, cool. I like them. I'm going to collect them.
Yeah.
And when I got it, I was like, oh my God, it looks so good. And I start to buy more of them, because I wanted to play with them on my decks.
Yeah. I can just imagine your deck just with 4 Frieza or something. That's amazing.
I have 5 Friezas there.
I mean, amazing, man.
Yeah, because I really love that Frieza card. And do you know the card itself? What is the word that is written on the I think on the card? It's love and laughter always.
Yeah.
So that was the card that's not just signed, but the guy actually wrote love and laughter always. Yeah. And I believe the reason why, it's because he was in bad health at the point of time. The voice actor.
Linda Young, right?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, embarrassingly, I have no idea. But I've heard stories that he was in bad health, and that's why he signs like that. And correct me if I'm wrong. I could be totally wrong, because no research, nothing. This is what I've heard. But I always find like when he wrote something so personal, which is love and laughter always, I was like, oh my God, it's so nice, from Frieza, iconic character, very beautiful card, the yellow and the the black border looks so nice, and the card itself, it was pretty good at the time. So I need it. So
yeah, man. Yeah. See that feeling, like I need it. I mean, that's what makes you a collector, man.
Correct. And I actually was surprised because someone texted me last year or beginning this year and said that, hey, have you checked the prices of the card? And I was like, what do you mean? Because the person kind of knew I have a pretty big collection.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, you should check it. And I check it. And I was like, oh my God, this is ungodly. Like,
yeah. How did that make you feel, man?
It makes me, okay, the two folks. The first one is I was so happy. I was just telling my friends that I strike it rich already, and I was about to quit my job. No. I was happy because this is where I felt that the TCG itself have moved on to another level. That's why I said the collectors, it's really part of the game because now the card holds value.
Yeah.
And you cannot have it both. You cannot have a cheap TCG and then expect your card to hold value. I believe that, you know, one has to give. Now it is no longer cheap TCG, but you can guarantee that if you buy the cards properly, there is some values in the card, especially the collectible ones, right?
Yeah.
But on the second part, I have to say, might offend some of the collectors here. There were quite a lot of hilarious part coming in from the collectors Facebook group because of people were buying some cards which were, in my opinion, not rare at all.
Yeah.
And they were buying those cards and they were kind of proud of it and said that, hey, take a look, I own this card now. And I was like, do you know, my friend over here has a pack of 15 of them and they were still in top solid packs. And I believe that a lot of distributors have like a boxes of them. Like the coming soon card, I think that's a notorious one, right?
Oh, yeah, man.
what is it? What's the deal with that coming soon card? Because I think I have around 5 to 6 of them at home.
Do you know the story behind it? Why it shot up in price all of a sudden?
No. I have no idea. But I knew they were quite expensive, right?
Yeah. So for the coming soon promos, that's pretty funny. I'm gonna filter it out a little bit for this podcast, which if you want, I can give you the full details later. But there's actually a huge Pokemon collector called Gary.
Okay.
He's someone that has been into Pokemon since day one as an adult, right? So now he's an old man.
Okay.
But
is he the guy who appeared at Pawn Star?
Yes, that guy. Yeah.
Exactly. Wow, my God. Yeah. 30 something million. Oh, see, how much was it?
What did you say?
No, his collection was how many? It was crazy.
It's
insane.
It's you can't price his collection apparently, but I mean it's all seeing, right? But even just his Charizard, right? Even just his Charizard, it's millions. But so this guy, apparently, he doesn't only collect Pokemon, he collects basically everything, and I mean everything. And he, of course, he's also then in DBS, and he posted the coming soon promos on his Facebook, on his Instagram page, with a ridiculous description. His description was one time print, extremely limited, only given out at the launch, that's it, never to be printed again, that's it, right? First ever DBS card. And of course, it is the first ever DBS card. Of course, it's only one-time print.
Yes. But
what he doesn't say, what he doesn't say is that every shop got these launch kits and every single launch kit has 32 copies of them. That's what he doesn't say. Of course, all his Pokemon sheep, all the people that are here for the profits and not for the passion are like stonks, right?
Okay.
if he posts it on his Instagram, he's extremely influential. He's extremely influential. Then suddenly the entire Pokemon world got exposed to that one card. and they all think like that one card is going to blow up. And so, of course, everyone buys it only to find out that it's super available. And then,
all right.
It was from one day to another. I mean, it went from $5 to 250 or something from one day to another.
It was crazy. The prices was crazy. And I still remember that if you visit any shops and if you ask them and they took out their boxes and there were packs of them inside.
Of course.
Yeah. Like every single pack, it's not one of them. When they open a pack, there is, I don't know, 15 or
32
pieces inside. Yeah. And one of 32. My friend even has a pack of them at home. It was like, did you check? I think you're very rich right now.
Bro, I bought a launch kit myself.
Okay. 32. Wow.
I bought a launch kit myself before his post, right? Before the post of Gary. I bought the launch kit for $90, $90.
Okay.
90. So if I have 32 copies of that card, that's like $3 a card.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's insane. Not $250 that they were selling for like 2 weeks after. That's pretty funny. So yeah, that's something that can happen when someone very, very influential shows that he's also into the card game. And he has actually shown a picture of him holding an Assault of the Saints box, for example, which also brings a lot of awareness to other sets.
Yeah,
which is good for the long term, but you can see just short term, very, very, huge spikes in prices all of a sudden just because there's one influential person getting into the game.
Okay, that explains it. So this are the part that I don't want to be demeaning to. That's not my intention to the collectors, but you know that was kind of providing some hilarious
for sure
stuff for the players because we go like you know I have 3 to 4 copies at home, right? Like
yeah, but like, I mean
all my friends have some of them, and
the coming soon promos is a meme as well in the collectors community. It's a
It has already become a meme. People nailed that already.
I mean, it's a meme. As in the sense that we laugh about it. Post a meme on it, an actual meme. But I mean, we laugh about it too. Nobody cares about this card. I'm posting it. Nobody cares. And then suddenly he posts it, and poof, it goes up 50 times.
Okay, but that's understandable because at the point of time, there was also very little information about this card. But if you take a look at the pedigree of this card, one-time print, and it was the first card for this card game. Yeah, of course, take a look at this pedigree. It's simply pretty amazing, right? But I think the more rare card, which apparently not a lot of people talk about, is the Puzzle Hunt.
Yeah, the Trunks.
Trunks Puzzle Hunt. I think that is the more rare one-time print, one event a card.
Yeah, and it's also in terrible condition, apparently. So if collectors want it in a PSA 10, that Puzzle Hunt Trunks is going to be a pain to get.
But wow, okay.
The coming soon promos, I'm sure that in 1 year, there's a wave of hundreds that are going to flood the market all in PSA 10s. I think you'll be able to get a PSA 10 for 100 euros or something.
Okay, but that's due more than what I would like to pay. But we're different here because what I'm going to do is I'm going to invite you over to my channel. We do a podcast. Yours is a pop podcast. Mine is a podcast, Sensor Pop. So,
is it called Popcast?
Popcast.
That's amazing.
You wish you thought about it, right?
Oh man, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a podcast, and I'm just want to hear from the collector side. Like, what is the incentive of grading the cards? Because these are things that I don't know.
Oh yeah.
But we just leave it for another podcast.
We'll leave it for your podcast. So let's actually go move this conversation a little bit. I want to talk about your recent video on YouTube because you talked about rotation. That's something that I've heard about it. I've heard about it different in different times as well, but I mean apparently right now would be the point that people really start talking about it. So do you want to comment on rotation, what it is and why it's maybe necessary in the future?
Okay, so when it comes to rotation wise, right, this is going to be a very divisive topic. I can understand that. I don't understand it from the collector's point of view. So anything that I'm going to say, be just coming purely from the player's point of view, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this card game, it's kind of unique. It does not have rotation. Rotation as in all the cards that are printed are playable, except for the ban and Iwata list, right? Every single one of them, it's going to be very, very playable. The thing about this problem that we are having right now, I think it's twofold. The first one is that power creep. Our cards are getting more and more powerful, and this is how they need to do it, right? In order to sell products, the new set that's going to be printed needs to be more powerful than the previous set. Even simple cards, for example, like Super Combo. Your Super Combo for the next set needs to be a little bit more powerful than your previous Super Combo, which is kind of like a stable card in this card game. We see some effects. Like now this 3-drop card, this 3-cost powerful card can come out in 1-cost cheaper, or maybe can come out in 2 energy. And then a few sets later, 5-cost card can come out with 1 energy. The problem is, right now, we are seeing that. Okay, this game, it's around like 4 years, coming 4 years.
Yeah.
But what about the 5th year? What about the 6th year? How much can we do, right? How sustainable this can be? So if they try to slow the game down, the problem is the new set, because all the sets is playable, if you're going to print a new set of cards that comes out and it goes like, okay, this set is actually not powerful than my previous set, why do I want to buy the new cards then?
Yeah.
So in order to sell new products, they need to print more and more powerful cards that are more and more powerful. So this is problem number one. Problem number two, it's in order to sell also new set, they not only need to print more powerful cards, they also need to introduce more mechanics to make the gameplay, to freshen up the gameplay. In the past, they introduced Overrealm, and now we have introduced like Arrival, Successor, and stuff like that. You guys should know Successor because one of the expensive card in the game, it's that Sal Zeno card.
Yeah.
That SCR.
Yeah.
That card is blood really, really, really expensive.
So expensive.
That card has Successor. And that part, it's a mechanics that was introduced in, I think it was Series 9, to freshen up the gameplay. Now we have so many of them that imagine a new player that starts to play and they play a deck and it goes like, okay, this is how I charge my energy, this is how I play. And then they play with a player and the player uses mechanics 1 because that's the deck. Play with the second player, the second player has mechanics 2. Play with that third player, the player has mechanics 3. It is impossible. You, as a competitive player also, if you go to a competitive environment, best of one now in webcam, you have to prepare for every single thing. Because someone is going to throw something in your face, and you go like, okay, my deck just cannot deal with it. Not because you are not skillful enough, it's just that your deck is not prepared for it. And how do you prepare? You can't really prepare for everything because every single thing, every single mechanics, it's available. So eventually, I'm not saying that rotation is the answer. I'm also not saying that I am for rotation because I play a lot of very old decks also. But I don't know what is the answer. But this is all the information I can provide. And you just draw your own conclusion. Whether is rotation required to a certain extent in this card game?
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. So to summarize, one, of course, in order to give incentive to buy more product, they need to, like, the next set needs to be more powerful than the other. And to freshen it up, they also need to introduce more mechanics. But then in the end, you just have so many mechanics that it's not playable anymore. Right.
It's playable. I mean, it's playable for people who are in the card game. However, we talked about this earlier in this podcast that we said that, you know, we need all three of them. We need the collectors. We need the current players.
Yeah.
We also need the new players. So the easier, this card game, it's already sometimes pretty expensive, right? So if you have another barrier of entry, which is, okay, this card game takes some effort, some investment for you to learn, like time investment. then it's going to be a higher barrier of entry. I think for new players wise, we kind of need to lower down both of them, which is like the stable cost needs to be, it should be cheap to start playing the card game, affordable. Yeah. And at the same time, it should be easy to learn.
Yeah, I agree. Yep. Yeah, I agree.
Yep. So
So rotation would potentially solve these problems. And as you said, it's one of the only TCGs that doesn't rotate. So it would only make sense to move towards that direction the more the game grows.
Yep. But there are quite a lot of TCG I've heard that does not have rotation. However, in their form, they do have some ways to keep what is playable.
Yeah.
Intact. So I'm not saying that rotation is inevitable. I'm just saying that we do have problems in the card game. However, I'm not too sure if the collectors know. On the 17th of, I think this is this coming weekend, we have, according to Bandai, a very, very big ban and errata list coming.
Ah, okay. No, I didn't know about that.
Yeah,
no.
On the 17th.
Okay, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I must say I have no clue how to play. I never read the description of my cards. I just look at the art.
No, that is the other problem here. If the text box are getting so big right now, because even for the game designers, right, they have to make sure when they design a card that they play test all the way to the back. Back to set one and make sure nothing is broken.
Yeah.
Right? Because every single card. So if you design a blue battle card, we are seeing effects. I'm exaggerating here, but we're seeing effects that if your leader card, it's a blue mono blue Saiyan card, and you have a card, battle card in play that is non-skill, no non-keyword skill with better calls of two or less, and you have no unison card in play, and then your opponent has three or four, and we're seeing cards like that already. Yeah. It goes like, hey, I'm sorry, if I want to read a storybook, I would go to audible.com or something, but this is not happening.
There's actually one card that I really loved the art, the SPR of King Piccolo, Vicious Rejuvenation.
Is it the one that it says that we can win?
You remember the cards differently than I do.
Oh, yeah.
But basically, the collectors will know which card I'm talking about. It's basically, I mean, the art is amazing. It's like a blue and grayish art with Piccolo, man, with the gold foil. It looks amazing. But the problem is that the text box is so huge. So huge. It takes away from that art. It's unbelievable. If it would be a small text box, man, I would have gone nuts. But
okay,
instead I just bought a couple.
Is it the blue and gold King Piccolo?
Yeah.
Oh, I have a playset of that. That is a deck that I love a lot. But I agree with you, that text box, it's crazy.
Man, that text box though.
You know that is what we call a unison card, right?
Oh, man. Yeah. What did you say?
Do you know that is what we call a unison card? And unison card usually has like three effects. That is a unison card with one effect and the text box. It's so huge.
Man.
It's
unbelievable.
It's more than half of the card.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's definitely more. Yeah, yeah. It's man. Such a shame, man. But that would be interesting to see what Bandai decides to do, because you mentioned in your video that Bandai is noticing,
correct,
this barrier, right? They're noticing
mentioned
it. So yeah, I'm just wondering, like, what's your educated guess, I guess, or like what the future holds for us in terms of our favorite TCG?
Okay.
Do you feel it's gonna stay as popular or more popular? Do you feel like players are, do you feel like the player base is also still growing, or?
I felt that the player base is kind of stagnating, right? And that is my opinion here. I'm not too sure. From several design points, it's okay. We are seeing already a repeat of stuff, because how many times have we do Boo Saga already?
Yeah,
so many times, right? And this is a question I want to ask the card designers, which is, how are you guys going to keep it fresh? Because we already did what we can do, and that is why they bank so heavily on Dragon Ball Heroes. Because mm-hmm. Dragon Ball Heroes, it's the one that kind of constantly turn out new characters. We have if they make a card and they just pose like a mask, Super Saiyan Rose. Yeah. Oh my god, people
yeah,
want it.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah,
yeah, that would be pretty amazing, right? So for people who are complaining and say, hey, you know, they have enough of Dragon Ball Heroes, but think about this: how many times do you want to do Buu and Cell Saga? So how many androids do you want, right? So as much as I love the androids, but there's just so much, and I believe from the design point of view, that's kind of limited. I would like to see what the card designers plan to get around this issue. But from the player's point of view, I see a barrier of entry, which is price-wise and also the mechanics-wise.
Yeah.
People are difficult. I don't have exact numbers, so don't take my word for it. But on a general sense of feeling-wise, my channel somehow also do get a good sense of like newcomers, because my channel, it's casual. Mm-hmm. So, and I do a lot of explaining. So people might just come in and I can see new players, but maybe not as much. Events, we kind of need numbers from events, right? Like how many people are showing up in events to play it. Because if the number grows and it gets bigger and bigger. So, however, Tom, I am unable to answer this question for you, but I can tell you what I would like. That this card game to grow. So this is maybe my answer to you, unfortunately.
I have a gut feeling. I have a gut feeling that DBS is just set out for greatness. But that's also, I mean, that's super duper biased, right?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
I love the game, and I want it to continue as long as possible. But yeah. I mean, that's pretty damn honest. I see we're already at about 1 hour of podcast, so maybe I'm gonna ask you the final question. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure. Come at me,
Melvin. I've had a blast. Amazing. So anyway, you're welcome on the podcast whenever you want. My question is, do you have advice maybe for newcomers, like how should they start learning the game? Do you have resources already in place on your YouTube channel, or what's your general advice for the newcomer that wants to learn the game?
Oh, that's going to be difficult. The reason is what we already talked before, right? So just check out
let's say that the newbie is ready to step over the barriers, you know. Mm-hmm. He's ready, he's committed. What's your advice?
Okay, the first one is I would say that just look up there. I didn't do that video, but there is just so many people doing videos that teaches you how to play the Dragon Ball Super Card Game. As much as there are a lot of mechanics, those are really fun if you want to get into it. But there is a basic set of mechanics that you need to learn, which is, it's very easy. You pick it up in quite fast. And the second part is also, for learning wise, we have the DBSCG app that you can download, and you can already play some games with the computers, with the AI. So you can learn, and they have very beautiful animations. So you can also play with that. Some decks are already made for you. Now you already have a basic on what do you want to play too, right? Then the second part is, now you join the Dragon Ball Super Card Game Facebook group. You could ask them. Usually the people are very, very friendly. And I like it if someone is just trying to be a dick in the Dragon Ball Super Card group, there will be someone who comes in and say, hey, you know, new players and stuff like that, please be nice. And so go in, ask a question. You need to pick a deck and just ask people if you have a favorite character. Okay, just say that, okay, you have a favorite character, because that's how I started, right? I just want to play Broly and nothing else. So I pick Broly.
That makes sense.
Yep, and I build a deck around it. Get someone to help you to build a deck. And so pick a character, and then you build a deck. Or if you're a more competitive player, just ask people, you know, what is some of this competitive deck around, give your budget, and you will definitely get an answer. And you will definitely get also a playlist. But if you want to know more, deeper insight, like some of the new sets that are coming, or some of deck profiles and stuff like that, of course, check out my channel, Sensu Pop, on YouTube. And yeah, you should be able to. I'm pretty responsive when it comes to the comments, and also on my Instagram too. If you want to send me a private message, Instagram, then I would also respond to you. So that would be maybe my advice on how to start the Dragon Ball Super card game.
Yeah, I love it. I can't. Oh man, it's unbelievable because I, you know, I was up to date when they were building the DBSCG app, but I never got to download it. Man, I need to download it after this. I'm so ashamed to say that I don't have the app. I want to see how it looks.
And it's pretty fun though. It's pretty fun. So another person messaged me because it was the same advice. I said, hey, download the app, go play it.
Yeah.
And she was really having a lot of fun. And she said that, you know, she cannot beat the AI because the AI, it's not easy though. Let me tell you, the AI isn't easy. But I was able to explain to her and said, you know, what's one thing that's very important? Play the longer game and also explain some mechanics to her and say, hey, keep your hand size up because your AI, it's kind of stupid anyways. So be defensive. It's totally fine. And keep the number of cards in your hands and the number of cards in your AI. Always notice that. And with that advice, she was like, oh, okay. So I was able to use that app and tell her that, you know, hand size is very important in this deck. So don't be afraid if your opponent comes at you hard, because eventually if you win the game at one life, you win the game at one life, you win. You win the game at eight lives, you still win. So it's totally fine, you know. So I was able to use that to explain. So that was really nice.
I love it.
Yeah.
Melvin, thank you so much for this. I know it's, I mean, it's late over here, but I really, really appreciate you taking time to be here on the podcast and educating some of us clueless collectors, right? Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to ask you to come back on the podcast. It might be in a few months. It might be next year. I don't care, but we need definitely more players' insights on this podcast.
Thanks for having me also. And like I said, it's as much as you guys are the clueless player, right? I'm also the clueless collector. So I think we have a lot to learn from each other. And like I earlier mentioned, I think the friction that we have with the collectors and the players, it's because we ain't talking to each other. Like today, we just already said that, okay, those people who scalp like a new boxes, those are not actual collectors, right? They're just seeing money. And I believe that, you know, we need more interactions like that. So we bridge the gap between players and also collectors and form a better and more wholesome and healthier community. Because no matter if you're a collector, like a proper collector and a player, you know what we always wanted? We just want the game to grow and continue.
Yeah.
So why not work together and create and make this work and work together towards this goal, right? So thanks for having me. I appreciate because you are one of the collectors that I actually talk to.
Yeah, we do talk to each other once in a while at least. Yeah, so true, man. Thank you so much for your time, and I will look forward to be on your podcast.
Yeah, now we hear the collector side from the clueless players.
That's awesome, man. Talk to you soon, man.
Have a good night. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Passion Over Profits podcast. Please subscribe and stay tuned for more DBS collectors content. Interested in which guest we're having next week? Find out in the next episode of Dragon Ball's Passion Over Profits. Yes, Passion Over Profits.